What is your name? What a strange question that is. That's the question that Jesus asks when confronted by this man possessed by demons. What is your name? For the second week in a row in our gospel passage, Jesus cuts to the quick of a fraught situation with a simple question. Last week, after his feet have been bathed and anointed by a woman moved to tears, and his host is aghast, Jesus turns to this Simon the Pharisee and asks, "Do you see this woman?" And today, Jesus has just stepped ashore in Gentile territory and is immediately met by this naked, unhinged man. And Jesus' response is, "What is your name?" What kind of a question is that? Names. Today, friends, the Holy Word is drawing us to names. Now, the names that I'm thinking of aren't just our given names, though they may come with enough emotional freight on their own. No, I'm especially thinking of the names that we are given through the course of our lives. The kind of names that I'm thinking of today are the ones that possess you, much like these demons in the passage from Luke's Gospel. Now, for 21st century ears, the notion of demons can be rather bizarre and sometimes off-putting. It helps, possibly, and if it does, think of these demons as a form of evil, an evil that, as others have observed, when it gets its way, this evil is always destructive and ultimately self-destructive. I would offer that this form of destruction is always at work in the names that we have taken from others and then called ourselves. Names which malign, which wound, which distort our very souls. Names like stupid, like fatty, like unlovable, like slut, like can't be trusted, like nerd, like misfit. Of course, I could go on, but it would do no good. And I don't think that I'm alone in having heard, observed, or absorbed these names or others like them. And this is to say nothing of the names that are used to deform a whole group of people, whether they be set apart because of race or class or gender or orientation. Now, I mention these names only because I have known people that have carried these demons inside of them, been bound and shackled by them for years of their lives, tormented and possessed by their power. And it is demons like these that inform this passage for me. Because in knowing their effect, the response that Jesus receives from the one possessed for years, this response is heart-rending. When asked, "What is your name?" the man possessed responds, "Legion." In other words, so many names resided in him, possessed him, deformed him, that he couldn't even name them. They were simply too many. They overwhelmed him. How often do demons like these play in our minds, subtly preying on our sense of well-being, of health, of wholeness? These names and their corresponding distortions of our sense of self often unknowingly define us. And in the process, we find ourselves held captive. Now, I am not a psychologist. This is not my training. But as one who practices the cure of souls, I have seen these effects on people in middle school and in nursing homes. It corrodes our relationships with those around us and within ourselves. And in this process, like with the one formerly known as Legion, they can strip us of our very identity. And once we have lost our sense of identity, of who we are, how do we regain it? How does one go from being unclean to clean, from being possessed and living in the tombs, to being clothed and in one's right mind and living in community? Again, I can only speak to what I know, and that is not about psychological conditions. But what I do know has to do with the word that we encounter once again this week. The word in verse 36, the word used for this healing. It is the very same word in Greek for being made whole, sozo. And this word is rooted in an even older word in Greek meaning safe. It connotes a sense of healing that is about integrity of self, about connection with community. And it is here that the famous and inspiring section from Paul's letter to the Galatians can aid us. Because this text, too, deals with names. Names like Jew and Greek, slave and free, male and female. To be sure, in Paul's time, these names were being used to shackle and bind members of Christ's body, the church. What Paul knew is that when the descriptive becomes definitive, we live to our own distortion. It is not that I am no longer a man, or no longer a white man, or no longer a heterosexual white man. It is just that these descriptors, according to Paul's revelation about Jesus, these descriptors cannot be definitive about me. They are not, they cannot be the total summation or the distillation of who I am. For any time we reduce ourselves or others to mere adjectives, we have lost our ability to see the wholeness of that person. Make no mistake, friends, this practice is as common in our day as it was in the Roman Empire. Now again, there are still distinctions, but what Paul recognized is that these categories can no longer be used for stratification to determine who is inherently superior. And what Paul is pointing us towards is a communal, foundational identity, one in which we are all rooted. And this, then, is the hope for those of us deformed by the demons of our world. For indeed, we each have a name. And despite what our world might tell us, our name is Child of God. It's not that the rest of our descriptors disappear. That would be foolish, naive, and truthfully unwanted. It's just that our fundamental relationship, the relationship and therefore the name that fully defines us, that keeps us integral of the whole, is founded in Christ Jesus, and it is Child of God. Now, truth be told, just as this identity can be incredibly freeing for some, like it was for Legion, it can also be incredibly frightening for others, like it was for the people of the surrounding area. I am reminded of this as we come to the end of our passage this morning, because in this story, what really scares the people? Is it the demons that are coming out of this man? No. Is it the herd of swine that goes plunging into the lake? No. It's that this man who they had needed to bind in shackles was now clothed and in his right mind, sitting at the feet of Jesus. He had been changed, had been made whole again, and this is what terrifies them. Friends, we aren't often ready for the people around us to actually change, because now the names that we used for them no longer apply. And we ourselves must change, and that can be frightening. It's no wonder then that when the people of this area see what Jesus does, they send Jesus away. Because this kind of naming of what is true is deeply unsettling. Of course, in our story this morning, the challenge isn't just for the crowd. For one of the most difficult tasks in life lies in the attempt to be a new person in the same old place. What's interesting about this transformation is that, unlike other stories in this gospel, after calling for his name, Jesus sends this man back home. He's not allowed to follow Jesus as part of this band of students, but is told to go back home to be with all of the people that lived in fear of him. Right back with the people that bound him near the tombs that contained him. This too is like much of our lives, because rarely does a transformation come with a one-way ticket to an exotic, far-off destination. More often, we return to the very same spaces that held us but need not any longer. Back to the familiar names that attempt to haunt us, but have been shown for what they are. Friends, we need not live our lives in fear, bound by these demons and the names that they shackle us with. No matter how difficult the road or dark the night, remember who clothed you, child of God. Remember to whom you belong, child of God. Remember your name, child of God.